Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah, there's so many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman here on the Solar Topia Green Power and Wellness Show. We are back for another great hour. I got a wonderful guest who's actually going to be a guest host for you. Wilmer, are you with us?
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, man? So here's what happened. My wife's car broke down. I had to come get her. And my cell phone is about to die. So I am going to give Wilmer, you are a great host. I've read your stuff. You're a totally practiced hand. I'm going to entrust you with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show until I can get an Uber home and plug in my cell phone. How does that sound to you?
Well, Harvey, I'll do what I can. I'll hold it down as best I can.
I have read your bio. You are a fascinating character. I'm really honored to have you on. I'll be happy to listen to the show. I've never done this before, but I am sitting in a dead car with an almost dead sofa. And normally I would call it off and ask him to do a rerun, but I know that you are a brilliant guy, and I have read your bio, and I'm going to get home as soon as I can, get to a plug and call you in. But in the meantime, I'm going to turn over the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show to your trusted hands. How does that sound to you?
Well, that sounds great, Harvey. One thing, what is the call-in number for the guests, for listeners?
888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I hope people will call, and I will certainly call as soon as I can get home and get my cell phone plugged in. A perfect storm, but that means that you have a perfect opportunity to be in Solartopia with my wonderful audience. So, okay?
Let's go.
All right, buddy, it's all yours, and I will call you back.
Thanks, Harvey.
Thank you, man.
Well, listeners, you just heard, I'm Dr. Wilmer Leon, and I am the author of the book Politics, Another Perspective, Commentary and Analysis on Race, War, Ethics, and the American Political Landscape in the Age of Obama. I am a political scientist, as well as a nationally syndicated columnist, and the book is a collection of my op-eds from 2006 through currently. About 80 op-eds in the book, and I've divided the book into the segments of race, war, ethics, and the American political landscape. And the reason that the book is called Politics, Another Perspective, the other perspective is a historical perspective. One of the big issues that I see with a lot of analysis that takes place, whether it be network television, talk radio, or otherwise, is that people tend to view events as though they happen in a vacuum. We all too often forget to put current events in a broader historical perspective so that we can understand, so that we can have a better understanding of where things come from and why. So the other perspective of my book is a historical perspective, and so I try to do an analysis, trying to connect the current current dots with historical dots. Let me give you again, the call-in number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I am Dr. Wilmer Leon, sitting in for Harvey Wasserman here. Grab a line, and I'll work out on the fly with the producers how we actually communicate so that I know that we have callers on the line. But there is an awful lot that has been going on over the last few days. One of the big, big issues that I have just found incredibly, what's the word I want to use? I don't want to say amusing, because these things are too serious to be funny. Well, I can't come up with the term I want to use, but it has been amazing to me listening to President Trump talk about revelations that he has come to understand. For example, China is no longer a currency manipulator. Russia is no longer Donald Trump's friend. It's amazing to me how quickly President Trump has been able to just totally change positions on things that he campaigned so adamantly on, issues that he campaigned so adamantly about. And with a 10-minute conversation with the president of China, now all of a sudden China is no longer a currency manipulator, even though from the research that I have done, they stopped manipulating their currency about 2 years ago. Donald Trump also told us, in no uncertain terms, that he would be able to strike great deals with his buddy, Vladimir Putin. And now we find that that's seeming to be a little more challenging and a little more difficult than President Trump initially made it out to be. And here's what I really think is at the crux of these contradictions, these incredible contradictions, is that Donald Trump has never really developed a substantive worldview. He has never really developed a ideological framework from which he can develop policy and try to manipulate policy. Donald Trump, as a businessman, and we can discuss whether or not he is actually a very successful businessman, I would propose that or submit to you that anyone that has gone bankrupt 6 times, their business acumen would have to be called into question, but be that as it may. He's a transactional kind of guy. And what I mean by transactional is he approaches issues as though they're business deals. And when you approach the world as though it's a business deal, well, then you look at each deal as a standalone one-off circumstance, instead of there being a guiding ideological principle that you use as a basis of assessment for determining right and wrong, how to proceed, how not to proceed, what to do, what not to do. So when you view the world on a transactional basis, then in my opinion, it is much simpler for you to just flip-flop on a position, because that position isn't really based upon anything substantive. The position isn't based upon any real moral basis or guidance. It is not based upon any long-standing, firmly held belief or position that you as an individual are unwilling to compromise on. So that is why you can, for the whole term of the campaign, scream about China being a currency manipulator, and you then can very easily, after a 10-minute discussion, change that position. Let me see. Is this now Jesse in San Francisco? Are we going to Jesse in San Francisco as a caller?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
I'm
I can.
Fine. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Jesse. You tell me, how am I doing?
So far, so wonderful. I want now. This might be a curveball. I'm not sure, but are you familiar with Cynthia McKinney?
I'm quite familiar with Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia McKinney is a friend of mine.
Okay, right on. So I, you know, she had a program on KPFA or KPFK, and then for whatever reason, the show was discontinued. But I really was appreciating her analysis. It kind of gave a whole another perspective on, you know, what is appearing to be politics as essentially another version of the hegemony project, either globally or the hegemony project nationally. And then I just wanted to like kind of get your take on that, but then also tie it into, of course, this is Solartopia. So the prospects for a revolutionary change around the development of renewable energy replacing the old, essentially the core of global hegemony has been around energy resources, at least for the last couple of hundred years. And so now that we're going to have abundant energy in every nation on the planet, then we're going to have less need for resource conflict and so forth. So that's all the positive. Of course, there's some, you know, the finance wants to own it all. But, you know, I think in general, it's more democratic. And so it's harder to do that. And so I just want to get your take on some of that, those ideas and connecting those dots.
Well, let's see what I can do here. One of the big issues in terms of global hegemony slash imperialism is that I believe the United States is finding itself in an incredible conflict. And that conflict is its interest in maintaining itself as the world's sole superpower, but not understanding that the sands upon which the empire was built are shifting and the world is changing. And instead of the United States understanding that the world is changing and understanding that it needs to change with the world, it is investing an ungodly amount of blood, treasure, and resources into trying to maintain the status quo. And what do I mean by that? Let's look at global international conflict and the fact that today the United States just dropped the MOAB, the mother of all bombs, in Afghanistan, and the United States is trying to fight asymmetrical warfare symmetrically. Instead of understanding that you can't kill an ideology with an army, you need to kill an ideology with a better ideology. But we as Americans can't seem to figure out that if we feed people, if we clothe people, if we provide people with the sustenance to live, that we will make more friends than enemies. And in terms of solar power, energy, one of the big issues that the United States transverses the world and terrorizes the world on has to do with oil. And if we were to embrace renewable energy and invest more and invest half as much in renewable resources as we have in the F-35 fighter jet program, we probably have a much more stable universe.
Hallelujah.
Harvey, you there?
Yeah, I am. You're doing great, man.
Oh, well, Harvey Wasserman is back for his own show, ladies and gentlemen. So let me turn it back over to Harvey.
You'll be glad to know that I am in a AAA tow truck. With a great driver here. We got my Volvo in the back, and he had a cell phone plug-in, so we're good for a while. So
okay.
It's
okay.
Really great. Now, your caller, I'm glad he mentioned Cynthia McKinney. She was She's a great person. I don't know why she doesn't have a show anymore. A lot of politics going on with KPFA and KPFK Pacifica, but some really good people have come into Pacifica now and are starting to revive the network. So we're all hoping that Pacifica is going to be, you know, back with us in great shape. And as for Cynthia McKinney, I think she was the victim of vote fraud, don't you? I mean, she was a very popular congressperson and had really great politics, and somehow they squeezed her out.
Well, what I understood and understand about Cynthia's campaign was not so much vote fraud, and this, I'm saying this not to say, not, I'm not saying it didn't happen. My understanding is because Georgia had an open primary, that there was a lot of money, particularly out of state money, that poured into that campaign, and a lot of Republicans voted in the Democratic primary against Cynthia.
Yeah, and I've heard that too.
Okay, okay.
I've heard that too. So, you know, but she was, and you know, the Democratic Party, I think, is the problem. I mean, Hillary Clinton ran like she was a queen waiting to be coronated. And, and she couldn't even be bothered to campaign in Wisconsin. And couldn't be bothered to take Bernie Sanders as their vice presidential candidate, which I think would have allowed her to walk into the White House. So, you know, I got some very specific opinions about the Democratic Party. What about you, Wilmer?
Oh, I agree with you 1,000% on that point. I believe that Hillary ran not to lose, instead of running to win. I think the Democratic Party did themselves a tremendous disservice by trying to play the campaign as the politics as usual, instead of understanding that there was an incredible groundswell, an incredible undercurrent supporting Bernie Sanders.
Sure.
And they were running their politics the same way now that we're running this government. They're trying to hold on to those last vestiges of empire instead of understanding that the sands upon which that empire was built has shifted beneath their feet. Barack Obama, I think, did the same thing. President Obama ran from the constituency that put him into office and became the corporatist that I think he always was, instead of playing to his base, rallying the troops that sent him to the White House, and doing the things that they sent him there to do.
I 100% agree with you. You know, he was a real corporatist, a purveyor of empire, throwing cruise missiles all over the place like Trump. And, you know, and I got to tell you, you know, since we focus on energy a lot in this show, you want to go north. I'm just talking to the AAA driver here. This is the most fun I've had doing a radio show from the cabin of a AAA tow truck. This is fantastic. Anyway, but my driver's, what's your name again? Josh. My driver's great, Josh, and he's got me plugged in. So we're good on my phone, and this is the best radio studio I've ever had. So, but, you know, Obama, to evaluate him policy-wise, he was really a mediocre president. He had so much opportunity. He did get Obamacare in, which is an improvement. But, you know, they never, ever discussed. He did not have a serious discussion of national health care or of single payer. You know, and Hillary, when she was first lady, they wouldn't do that either. And as far as I'm concerned, Bill Clinton was in the bottom third of American presidents. He was, a terrible president. But at least Obama could speak in complete sentences, and he wasn't crazy. I mean, we do have some serious problems with this guy in the White House. We don't know what he's going to do next. I will admit it's entertaining. But when he starts throwing missiles around, you know, if he'd thrown those missiles at North Korea, we might be in the middle of a nuclear war right now. It scares the hell out of me. I don't know about you. But, you know, you're 100% right about the sands of empire. All empires fall. And we're in that's what's happening right now. We're in the midst of a falling empire. You know, I teach ancient Western civilization. We got Athens and Rome and Sparta and Babylon and Persia and England. They all fell. And that's what's happening to us right now. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And it's happening on a number of levels. If you look at this economy, the economy is thriving. That means that corporations are maximizing profit. but they are not reinvesting that profit back into the country and creating jobs. They are pursuing the cheapest labor pool possible and going anywhere around the world to do so. A perfect example, current example of that, I was reading that Apple is now moving to no longer make the iPhone in China. They're going to start making the iPhone in India, not Indiana, right. India.
Exactly.
Why can't the iPhone be made in the United States? Why can't those jobs come back to the United States? So when you look at what's happening from an economic perspective, when you look at what is happening in this country from a military perspective, one can only come to the realization that the empire as we've known it is waning.
Yeah, it's on its way out. And let's just hope it doesn't roll over and crush us. It's interesting. I had, and I do think there are two saving graces in this country, Wilmore, that I think are going to allow us to escape the fall of this empire, hopefully more than some others. And one is our diversity. You know, this is the most diverse country. We have about 15% black, 15% Hispanic, I don't know what percent Asian American, Muslims, Jews, you know, all over the map. And that's a great thing. And that I think will, it's interesting. I had I teach at a college here in Central Ohio, and I teach diversity. And I had a guy speak, he's since passed away, was a Holocaust survivor. And he lived to be 102. He was in 9 camps. This guy was the toughest guy I ever met. And I asked him, you know, he spoke to my classes about the Nazis, and I asked him if he thought fascism would ever come to America. And he instantly said no. It shocked the heck out of me, really. I was amazed. But he instantly said no. His name was Abe Weinrib. And I asked him why, and he said because the country's too diverse. You got too many different groups. And so fascism will be extraordinarily difficult here. I mean, we're really getting tested right now, but that's the way it is. And then the other is that we do have a tradition of democracy here in this country, where Germany did not. And so, you know, they're stamping it out as best they can, but I think the idea and ideals of democracy are pretty deeply ingrained in our DNA. But on the other hand, so is the idea that we have the right to conquer the world. So I don't know what's going to happen. What are your predictions here, Wilmer? What do you think is coming next?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question. That's a conversation that I have with people on a fairly regular basis. I think that we are flirting with, we're on the fringes of some fascist elements making their way into our politics. I don't know that the diversity of the country is the saving grace or the protection against fascism. And the primary reason is because racism is still so prevalent and powerful within the country. So the way that I am seeing the democracy being eroded is through the continued, I'm drawing a blank on the word I want to use, but through under the pretext of racism. So if we listen to Donald Trump's campaign against Mexicans, if we listen to Donald Trump's Muslim ban, if we listen to Donald Trump talking about going into Chicago with the military and taking over the city, all of those things have either direct or indirect racist over or undertones. And so people are being convinced to vote against and sacrifice their own interests based upon xenophobia and racism. And I think those elements, and that's very similar to what Hitler did in terms of the anti-Semitism that he used in order to do away with the rights of Jews in Germany. So right. when you start to create the image of people, or you play to the image of people as the other, then the fascist elements may not be too far behind.
Please. Yeah, I'm glad you're still on the line. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you so much, Harvey, and sir, I don't know your name.
Wilmer
Leon, thank you. So on those issues, you know, just kind of on a maybe pushing for optimism or something to that effect, you know, these elements have certainly have always been there. In some ways, you could even draw the connection between the U.S. and the Nazi regime back then, you know, with all of our corporations and some of even some institutional aspects of our government that were, in a sense, supporting that development. And that's kind of always been there. And using things like nonviolent communication, you know, my new attitude is like, you know, even these bad guys have a, you know, they have, ultimately everybody has the same needs. And by pushing this message of abundance, especially particularly through this new type of energy that doesn't have victims and sacrifice zones and exclusion zones, with solar and wind and now EVs, we actually can look at a world where, you know, the medium income is essentially equalized throughout the world, and, you know, that China's living just as high on the hog as we are, but all of us are using less destructive, having less destructive impacts on the environment. So, yeah, just on a hopeful manner, and then looking at whatever is going against that as, well, you know, they just haven't learned yet.
Well, you're 100% right about that. In terms of renewable energy, it really changes the whole landscape, which is why they're resisting it so hard. You know, there are laws being passed all over the country now to slow down the spread of renewable energy, even though it's cheaper, safer, cleaner, and creates more jobs than any other form. What they don't like about it, the corporations don't like about it, is that it gives people control of their own energy source. And that's one of the themes of Solartopia, is that in it, everybody is going to control their own energy with rooftop solar and wind power and LED lighting. I just read an astonishing statistic today, by the way. There's more than 5,000 megawatts, which is a huge amount of energy. 5,000 megawatts of installed rooftop solar in California. It's an astonishing number. It's 5 nuclear power plants, and there's only 2 actual nuclear power plants operating now in California. We're trying to shut them down at Diablo Canyon. But you're right, caller. What's your name?
Jesse. I've met you once, and I'm a huge fan, Harvey.
Oh, cool. Excellent. And you're in California, right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I work in solar energy. It's been my passion for a long time, and, you know, I've been able to make a living off of it.
Well, you know how many people work in the solar industry in California? 65,000. There's about as many people working in solar in California as there are coal miners in the entire United States. I mean, it's an astonishing statistic, really. And it's quite amazing. You're welcome to stay with us. Wilmer, Leon, I want you to tell us a bit. You've written quite a few books this way up here. You'll all be glad to know we're pulling into the Volvo Service Center for my 1992 Volvo, which is in the back of this AAA truck. And Josh has done a great job of riding me here, and he's been listening to the show patiently. But tell us about your books, Wilmer. Tell us what you do and what you're about.
Well, thank you, Harvey. As I said at the top, I'm a political scientist. I'm a nationally syndicated columnist and a talk show host on Sirius XM Channel 126 Urban View. My show is called Inside the Issues with Wilmer Leon. And what I've done with the book Politics Another Perspective is I have taken about 80 of the op-eds that have been published since 2006 and organize them thematically so that we touch on race, war, ethics, and the American political landscape. And each section has its own introduction, and so it's the introduction to the section that makes the op-eds evergreen. And I wanted to find a way to articulate serious, fairly complex issues to the average reader or average listener. And so using the op-eds, I found to be a very effective way to do that. And so the book is a collection of op-eds, and I've gotten very, very, very good response. People can go to WilmerLeon.com. They can go to WilmerLeon.com and get an autographed copy of Politics, Another Perspective.
Well, what is your burning passion right now, Wilmer? What are you writing most about? I'm sure you're a big fan of Donald Trump, so you may have a few things to say about him.
I am writing about the hypocrisy that Donald Trump represents, and the hypocrisy that both the Democrats, but more, I think, directly the Republicans, are demonstrating in their support for him. I'm also writing about neoliberalism and how racism is being used in this country to sell the whole idea of neoliberalism. And I've done an awful lot of writing on these extrajudicial police killings, as we have just seen the horrific examples of police shooting down unarmed African Americans in the street.
Well, let's talk about that now. Since Ferguson, there's been still more killings. What are we going to do about this? I mean, you know, I'm sure that there are plenty of killings that have occurred that we haven't heard anything about. I mean, what is the answer here to the police assaults on the African-American community?
Well, I think that there are a number of tactics and things that have to be implemented. First of all, African-Americans have to understand how to better engage with the police in order to increase the probability that they will be able to leave a encounter the same way that they entered the encounter. It's not a matter, and that statement is in no way, shape, or form intended to absolve the police of responsibility. It's a matter of understanding that you can't win a fight with a cop in the street. You fight the cop in court once you've been able to extricate yourself from the situation. There has to be a much greater level, I think, of screening, of doing psychological profiling of police cadets and of possible cadets. There are psychological profiles and tests that can be given to get an indication of an individual's propensity for racism and responding and bias and responding to certain circumstances, certain ways. And so if you're able to make an assessment of an individual's propensity for bias, you then can make a determination, is this an issue that we can address through additional training, or is this particular individual too much of a bigot or a racist for us to allow onto our police force? There has to be a shift in the electorate's understanding of when police officers should be prosecuted. And if a police officer is charged with murder, particularly of an unarmed individual, we've got to do more to treat that officer as a regular citizen, as opposed to providing them the protections that the police union and the police force want to provide them. Because once you start shooting unarmed individuals, you're acting like a hitman instead of somebody who's out there to protect and serve.
Well, I'm going to agree with you on that 100%. And, you know, it is a nightmare here, the policing situation. The police in this country are getting more and more military weapons. It's becoming, you know, very much a fascist situation. And, you know, I'm not black, and so I don't quite, I'm not subjected to the same pressures. You know, it's a nightmare. I'm sure it's gotten a lot worse since Trump has come in power, because he's validated a lot of these racist views, and it's not a pretty picture. I want to put something out there. I've been kicking this around, and I want to see what you think, Wilmer Leon. I think that this whole attack on immigrants and on Hispanics in general has a, if it's not conscious, it's certainly semi-conscious as a campaign to stop Hispanics from voting.
you know, we have these computer programs that are disenfranchising millions of black people. Greg Powis has done his book, the best movie, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
Right.
You know, that's all pretty much about African Americans. But I think that this attack on Hispanics that Trump is raising in terms of, you know, anti-immigration sentiment does have a side impact of trying to keep Hispanics from voting. What do you think about that?
I think that that is a element to the rhetoric, an element to their logic. It's important for the audience to realize that the cross-check program that Chris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas, implemented not only targeted African Americans, but also targeted Latino surnames and also targeted Asian surnames. As recent polling has demonstrated that Latinos, there's been a great shift in Latinos voting Democrat, as well as a shift in the Asian population voting Democrat. If you look at Greg Palast's work and you look at his numbers, if Greg's numbers hold up, and I tend to trust Greg's research, the Republicans actually lost the state of Arizona.
They lost the election.
Well, I realize they lost the election, but they lost the state of Arizona. And there had been projections from 2 years ago that Arizona was going to go blue. And if Greg's numbers are are right, and I tend to think they are, Arizona did go blue. And so if Arizona goes blue, you most likely don't have John McCain in the Senate anymore. And you're looking most likely at along with not only Arizona, but Michigan, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, you're looking at a President Hillary Clinton, not a President Trump.
I'll be right here.
I believe that there is a all-out attack on minorities in this country, people of color in this country, and the weapons that are being implemented in this attack may vary depending on the ethnicity that is being attacked. So whether it's gerrymandering of districts, and there was just a vote, a court in Texas held that the most recent machinations by the Republican Party in Texas were proven to be targeted towards African Americans. So whether it's gerrymandering, whether it is the cross-check program, which is knocking legal registered voters off of the rolls, there are all kinds of tactics that are being used, and this attack on immigrants is one of them.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's amazing to me. The Democratic Party never ceases to amaze me. First of all, Hillary won by 2.8 million votes. Then we show, and this, of course, is a backstory way, way going back, but this is most recent. Then we show very clearly that in the five states that swung the Electoral College, Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, she won the exit polls, which indicates, you know, that doesn't happen in five states by accident.
Right.
You know, you would expect if there are problems with the voting that maybe she would have won two and he would have won three. He won all five. The statistical odds are that, well, that's what we call a virtual statistical impossibility. And so any sane candidate who had just spent $1 billion running for president and wins by 2.8 million votes and loses in the Electoral College because of five states where she wins in the exit polls might have said something. You know, you might have raised a little issue here that there could have been a problem with the legitimacy of this election. And what did Hillary Clinton say? Absolutely nothing. She completely disappeared. It was just on the day after the election, it was as if Hillary Clinton had never existed. Now, I guarantee you one thing. If Donald Trump had won this election by 2.8 million votes and then was told that he lost the presidency in the Electoral College in five states, where he carried in the exit polls, I guarantee you he would have had an army you know, a nuclear attack of lawyers looking into the recount. So then the recounts come around. And then, you know, is there, is there not a recount? The Democrats say no. They do absolutely nothing. And it's up to Jill Stein, one of my great heroes, one of the great heroes of American democracy, to go into Michigan and Wisconsin and just get treated like garbage by these, by these election officials, and in Pennsylvania, where you have a Democratic governor, and be completely unable to do any kind of meaningful recount, even though she raised $7 million in small donations of people desperate to have some kind of accounting in this election. And what do the Democrats say? Well, Hillary Clinton had absolutely no participation whatsoever in the recounts, except she sent a couple of lawyers somewhere, and she still hasn't said a word. And now you have this election in Kansas. This guy almost beat the Republican, and the Democratic Party puts in nothing, zero. They gave the guy zero support in his attempt to take a congressional seat in Kansas that he might have won. So, and, you know, and there's no discussion here of keeping Hispanics and blacks away from the polls. There's no discussion of electronic voting machines that can be flipped by a teenager in a basement. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Have you talked on your Sirius show about this stuff at all?
Oh, I've talked about it quite a bit. I have Greg Palast on quite often, and along with others, to talk about this. And in terms of Hillary Clinton's deafening silence, I think she got baited into, I think Donald Trump was very, very shrewd and adept at baiting her into a conversation when he started talking about the election being rigged, and she jumped on the bandwagon and said, oh, no, it's not, no, it's not, no, it's not. I think he basically lured her or baited her into a position to where, had she then come out at the end after having lost and said that the election was in fact rigged, she would have looked like she was flip-flopping. Because when he started talking about the election being rigged, she should have come out and started talking about the cross-check program. She
Absolutely.
Should have started coming out saying, yes, the Republicans are trying to rig the election, and here is how they're trying to do it.
Yeah,
Congressman Alcee Hastings took the evidence of the cross-check program to then Attorney General, I'm drawing a blank on the former Attorney General's name, but and presented
right?
the evidence to her and told her, I'm putting this in your hands because I don't want you to ever say that you never received it. He did this in September. So there was
right.
plenty of time for the Democrats to have done their homework, done their research. There was plenty of time for President Obama to come out and start talking about the potential problems with the election based upon the cross-check program. They chose not to do it.
Not a word.
And,
one of these Democrats has said a word.
Loretta Lynch is who I'm trying to, was the name
Loretta
I was trying
Lynch,
to come up
exactly
with.
Right.
Loretta Lynch.
She sounds like a country singer. But, you know, by the way, those of you who are really want to hear this narrative, just as the show was about to go on, my wife called me, said the car was broken down. I drove we have two 1992 Volvos. I drove the white one. Her green one was broken down at the freeway. My phone was dying. The charger didn't work. The AAA guy showed up just as you came on, Wilmer, and took over the show. He had a charger in the car. And I did the in the truck. So we rode in the truck long enough to get me up to 24%. I am now. We've dropped off the car at my friendly Volvo place with my buddy Rob. I think it's just because she put in bad gas. I don't know. So, but I have enough charge to get through the show, thankfully, and then I'm gonna take an Uber home. So there we go. I know you're all dying to hear that.
And let people know that this was not a hostile takeover of your show.
That's
asked me to do so.
Absolutely. Well, I knew you're a radio guy, you know, and a radio guy is always ready to take over a show, you know. So I don't know how many shows in the history of American radio have been done from the cab of a AAA tow truck. I'll bet there have been a couple, but this is another one, so there you go. But now I'm standing outside the Volvo dealer here in Columbus, and my buddy Rob, and I'm going to explain to him what happened to my car, and we'll move from there. What happened to the election is that Donald Trump was a brilliant strategy, saying the election was rigged. It goddamn well was rigged, but he rigged it, or it was rigged for him. And,
right,
you know, and the bottom line here is that the Democratic Party has won every presidential election in this country since 1992. Clinton won in 92 because Ross Perot ran. Clinton won in 96 because, you know, he just flat out beat Bob Dole. Al Gore won in 2000 and didn't say a word when George W. Bush and his brother Jeb stole it. John Kerry won in 2004 and didn't say a word when Bush and Karl Rove and Kenneth Blackwell, the Attorney General, or the Secretary of State of Ohio, stole that. Then Obama won in 2008 and 2012 because there were an army of volunteers out there willing to make sure that the election was carried out properly. That army did not show up in 2016, but Hillary won anyway and didn't say a word, still hasn't said a word. Nobody in the mainstream Democratic Party has said a word about electronic vote flipping or about the stripping of blacks and Hispanics and Asian Americans from the voter rolls. And here we are. And then, you know, we're already all these, they're all yapping about the Russians. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of stuff out there about the Russians. I mean, these aren't exactly nice people, but you know, the election of 2016 was rigged and hacked and flipped and stolen by a Republican Secretary of State, for God's sakes. And we're not hearing a word about this from Hillary Clinton or the Democratic Party. Have you?
No. And that is one of the greatest mysteries in terms of why the Democrats want to fall into this discussion about the Russians. We don't have to look at the Russians and look at the Kremlin. We just have to look at the Republicans and Kobach. That's where your election got stolen. The Republicans and Kobach, not the Russians and the Kremlin.
Right. And Kobach is the Secretary of State of Kansas, and he put out this program Cross-Check, which Greg has, you know, done.
Yeah, 29 states subscribed to the Cross-Check program.
Right. And they use it to eliminate black, Hispanic, I guess Asian American.
And Asian Americans as well, yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're talking about 15% of the electorate is black, 15 is Hispanic, roughly. I don't know what percent is Asian American, 5, 10. I think it's probably around 5. And Muslims are about, there's 8 million Muslims. I mean, you got an electoral majority right there. It's insane. And yet, you know, I think, frankly, a lot of the Democrats are much happier having Trump in the White House than they would be having Hillary. Because, you know, look at all the money they can raise, and they don't have to take responsibility for everything. Anything, and they can go out there and just say, hey, look at me, I'm a Democrat, I'm not Trump, and that's enough. You know, they don't have to do any heavy lifting. They don't have to do any real thinking or politicking. All they got to do is say is Trump, 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 and the money pours in, and, you know, they're good. And they don't care. They don't care. It's amazing. I once sat in a room, actually. I sat in a room with Barbara Lee, the great congresswoman from Berkeley, and it was right after they stole the 2004 election. I was with her and two other Democratic congresswomen. And I laid out the whole story, and, you know, because we saw, Bob Fitrakis and I saw the election stolen in Columbus, Ohio in 2004. We'd written 7 or 8 books about it. And I laid out the whole story, and I said, why hasn't John Kerry done anything about this? And Barbara Lee looked at me. She's such a wise lady, and she said, you know, he just don't care. He's got $300-400 million, and you know it was fun for him to run for president, but he lost, and he just doesn't care. And they still haven't said a word. Al Gore has never said a word about the theft of the 2000 election, and John Kerry has never said a word about 2004, and Hillary Clinton will never say a word about 2016. I mean, what is it with these people?
Well, I think Barbara's point is spot on. I think that the focus and the importance that we put on the election as the electorate is different than the focus and level of importance that the millionaires like the Clintons and Al Gore and the others put on it. They're playing the game at a whole nother level than we're playing it. And one of the mistakes I think we make is we tend to equate our interest and passion for democracy, and we tend to think that because they're running for president in the system, that they have the same interests as we do. And what we find out time and time again is that they don't.
No. You know, you mentioned three people, Al Gore, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton, each of whom is not merely millionaires, but hundreds of millions of dollars. They're all worth hundreds of millions.
Right.
They're probably worth more than Trump. I mean, Trump has this image, but I don't know how much money he's really worth. That's probably why he didn't want. I don't know. I'm not sure he doesn't want to release his tax returns because he's probably nowhere near the net worth as people think he has. I'm probably embarrassed. But, you know, no, it's a nightmare. And you know who, of course, I don't have to tell you, Wilmer, but you know who the number one popular politician in the United States is by a long shot. No one else is even close. Is Bernie Sanders. He has very, very low negatives, very, very high positives, you know, and I had a breakfast with a former congressman from Florida, and he did the polling. He did polling the weekend of the election, and his poll showed that Bernie could have beaten Trump by 10%, 10 or 11%, even though he's a 73-year-old.
I think that's a low number.
Yeah, I do too. Actually,
you know, there's a reason why, and this is something that I haven't heard anybody else discuss. I think there's a reason why the NFL owners did not want Donald Trump to own an NFL franchise.
He's a crook.
Nobody asked the question when Donald Trump tried to buy an NFL team and those owners circled the wagons and kept him out of the NFL. There was a reason. And I think the reason was then and continues to be, he's not the billionaire that billionaires respect.
Well, I think he's going to stay in the White House until he becomes one, and he's going to leave.
I've been saying all along, I think the one person in this country who was most surprised by the victory was Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's really freaked out, you know.
He did not do this to become president. He did this, I believe, to start a news network with Steve Bannon and Roger Ailes. And that
it's really something else. You know, Wilmer, the time has flown by.
Yes.
Identify yourself. Tell us how people can get your books. Can touch with you, and then we'll talk until the music comes on.
You can go to WilmerLeon.com, WILMER, WilmerLeon.com, and you can learn about the show. You can get the book. The book is Politics, Another Perspective. I am on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 126, on Saturdays from 11 to 2.
Well, I would be honored to come on your show anytime you give me a call. We can
continue
this conversation. And you're a great host as well as a guest. I'm looking right now at about 200 Volvos here at the lot, about to get an Uber to go home. But we did this. This is a lot of fun for me. But I got to tell you, you know, Trump is actually starting now to moderate. You know, he flung these missiles at Syria, which was just totally outrageous. I mean, you know, he just wakes up and, these guys. He looks at these pictures of the dead kids. They could have been the kids that we killed, for God's sakes, you know.
Right.
Fling some missiles. His polls go up. He's getting rid of Steve Bannon. And who knows? I don't think he's going to turn out to be a liberal, but we get surprising things, you know, from people. Reagan, whose politics I detested, you know, at the end of the day, you know, by the time he had completely lost his mind, and Nancy took over. They actually did end the Cold War in concert with Gorbachev. Maybe Trump will do something astounding. I don't know. Now, I have an article coming out calling for a massive civil disobedience campaign to push him out, and I think we have to prepare for that. You know, one thing, Wilmer, you got to remember, we all have to remember, is that Richard Nixon would have used nuclear weapons in Vietnam had it not been for the anti-war movement. He was very explicit about that.
Yes, and so, you're absolutely right.
And so whatever we think about Donald Trump here and there, we have to have a mass movement in place to prevent him from blowing up the world. I mean, he could wake up one morning and just decide to fling a couple missiles at that crazy kid in North Korea, you know, completely forgetting that that crazy kid has nuclear bombs. And I'm sure we've all seen the end of Dr. Strangelove, you know, where the bombs are going off and the woman singing, "We'll meet again, don't know where, don't know when," you know. So this, we have to have a national grassroots nonviolent movement in place to deal with this maniac and the guy who comes after him, and the guy who comes after him. Otherwise, we got nothing, don't you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And let me just quickly say, people have to understand, Donald Trump may be stupid, but he's not crazy. Kim Jong-un is crazy. And the one thing crazy knows is crazy. And so as Donald Trump wants to stick out his chest and do all this posturing with Kim Jong-un, Trump needs to understand you don't do that with a crazy person.
And
Kim Jong-un understands Donald Trump isn't crazy, again, because crazy knows crazy.
Yeah,
it's just irresponsible what Donald Trump is doing.
I think we got to send Dennis Rodman over there again. What do you think?
That's not a bad idea.
I think so. You know, I mean, get him the maybe one of the NBA final games they should have in Pyongyang. You know, that would really calm things down. Send LeBron over there, man. I bet LeBron could solve the whole him and Magic. Send them over. I bet they could solve the whole problem. What do you think?
Well, he's a smart guy that is politically in tune, so that would not surprise me.
No, we need Magic. Magic, you know, Magic's taking over Los Angeles, so he could probably do a good job with North Korea as well. What the heck, you know? Well, it's a crazy time, and I can't help thinking that, you know, Hillary would also have been. We'd be probably on the brink of nuclear war with Russia right now. And, you know, Trump seems to have made some kinds of deals with the Russian mafia. I think that's what we're going to find out, you know. I think within a year or less, we're going to find some serious illegalities that this administration has perpetrated. And there will be a constitutional crisis. He's too sloppy. He's really a sloppy guy and an arrogant guy. And that's what happens, you know, when people are like that. They step in it. You know, Nixon committed treason in 68. He illegally bombed Cambodia in 70. And then they throw him out based on what he correctly called a third-rate burglary. So I think what's going to happen, my prediction with Trump is that he's done so many things illegal that at one point in time something's going to come up and somebody's going to decide to move him out.
But the question there is going to be, with a Republican House and a Republican Senate, as well as he's now stacked the court with Gorsuch, will there be the political guts within his own party to hold him accountable for what he does?
Well, you know, I bet if you polled the Republicans in Congress now, who they like better, him or the vice president, I bet the vice president will end up 3-1. You know, I mean, I'm sure they're a lot more comfortable with Pence than they are with Trump.
God help us on that one.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's been great, man. We'll talk again.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, man.
Thank you, crew in New York. This was a lot of fun. See you next week in Solartopia.
What we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden. Don't you know we're gonna have-